Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1908, with a release date of March 7th, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, 200 tiny satellites to be orbited in one launch this month. The ARRL requests member comments on digital high-frequency operations. The IARU announces the theme for Amateur Radio Day 2014. The FCC issues some stiff fines to cablecasters that broadcast a commercial with EAS tones. An Oregon Aries group donates a ham station to a mobile response clinic. And the United States Ham is honored for expanding the Summits on the Air program to this nation. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1908, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
200 tiny satellites will soon launch skyward for a short stay in space. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, is here with the details.
The largest ever launch of microsatellites operating in the 437 megahertz band is planned for March 16th. That's when some 200 tiny Sprite satellites on the SpaceX Falcon 9 CRS-3 mission will fly into orbit. A Sprite is a tiny 3.5 by 3.5 centimeter single-board spacecraft that was developed by SAC Manchester, KD2BHC. It has a microcontroller, radio, and solar cells, and is capable of carrying single-chip sensors. These might include thermometers, magnetometers, gyroscopes, accelerometers, and the like. The 300 Sprites will be carried into a CubeSat called KickSat. They're stacked atop a spring-loaded pusher and secured by a nichrome burn wire system. On reaching orbit, KickSat will perform a detumble maneuver and establish communication with Cornell University's ground station. After checkout, the spacecraft will be put in a sun-pointing attitude and spun up to maintain that attitude. Then a command signal from the ground station will then trigger the deployment, and the Sprites will be released as free-flying spacecraft. These microbirds will then be in a 325 by 315 kilometer 5.15 degree inclination orbit. After deployment, telemetry and sensor measurements from the individual Sprites will be received through Cornell's ground station in Ithaca, New York, as well as several other amateur ground stations around the world. All of the 200 Sprites operate on a single frequency of 437.240 MHz and use code division multiple access. The transmitter runs only 10 milliwatts, transmitting minimum shift keying modulated with binary data. Each data bit is modulated as a 511-bit pseudo-random number sequence. Due to the low orbit, Sprites will have a short lifetime before they re-enter the atmosphere and burn up. In the best-case scenario, the orbital lifetime could be 6 weeks, but realistically it may be considerably shorter depending on atmospheric conditions. And while likely short-lived, these 200 Sprites will be making the space adventure of a lifetime for many experimenters come true. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
You should be able to watch the mission live on NASA TV at tinyurl.com/sprite-launch. As we wait for the 200 Sprite mega mission, comes word that Ham Radio has a number of new microbirds on orbit. On Friday, February 28th, astronaut Koichi Wakata, KC5ZTA, deployed a batch of amateur radio CubeSats from the International Space Station. These include Litwanica Sat-1, Litsat-1, ArduSat-2, UAPSat, and the 915 MHz SkyCube. There is yet another amateur radio CubeSat still on the ISS. It's the Peruvian-built Chasqui-1, which was launched to the space station on February 5th. It's understood that this bird is scheduled to be hand-deployed during a future Russian spacewalk. Meanwhile, here on the ground, the ARRL says it is seeking comments from its members concerning the use of digital modes, especially on the high-frequency bands. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Imby, KB3TZD has the details.
At its January 2014 ARRL Board of Directors meeting, a resolution was passed which asked for member feedback and input pertaining to the increasing popularity of data modes. The information gathered by this investigation is to be used by the League's High Frequency Band Planning Committee as a means to suggest ways to use our spectrum efficiently so that these data modes may compatibly coexist with each other. As per the resolution, the ARRL Board of Directors is now reaching out to the membership and requesting input and thoughtful feedback on matters specific to digital mode operation on the HF bands. According to the League's announcement, the feedback on this matter may include, but is not limited to, the recent proposal of the ARRL made to the FCC in RM11708, this regarding the elimination of the symbol rate restrictions currently in effect. The Board of Directors believes that member input in the decision-making process is both valuable and important, as well as fostering a more transparent organization. It is to this end that they have opened this dialogue. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
Comments must be received no later than March 31, 2014, to be included in the committee's report to the board at the July 2014 ARRL Board of Directors meeting. Please email your comments to hf-digital-bandplanning@arrl.org. The International Amateur Radio Union Administrative Council has designated Amateur Radio, Your Gateway to Wireless Communication, as the theme for World Amateur Radio Day 2014. This ham radio holiday is celebrated each year on April 18th to recognize the anniversary of the founding of the International Amateur Radio Union in Paris, France, back in 1925. The primary purpose of World Amateur Radio Day is to focus a public spotlight on amateur radio and its benefits to countries and communities. This year, the International Amateur Radio Union and its member societies around the world will celebrate the organization's 89th anniversary. The Federal Communications Commission has proposed massive fines against cable television networks Viacom, ESPN, and NBC Universal. This for repeatedly transmitting an advertisement that misuses the warning sounds of the nationwide emergency alert system. Amateur Radio Newsline Stephen Kenford, N8WB, has more.
The FCC Enforcement Bureau has initiated a large-scale investigation in response to consumer complaints about a commercial being transmitted on multiple cable networks that used EAS tones in its content. The complaints described it as an advertisement promoting the release of the film Olympus Has Fallen. In response to the Bureau's letters of inquiry, each of the three companies admitted that the commercial aired numerous times on multiple national and regional networks under their control. Also, that it used actual EAS codes and the attention signal to advertise the film. Now, as a result of the investigation, the FCC has issued an omnibus notice of apparent liability for a total of $1,930,000 to the companies that break down in this way. Seven Viacom-owned networks transmitted the advertisement a total of 108 times over 5 days, resulting in a proposed forfeiture of $1,120,000. Three ESPN-owned networks transmitted the advertisement a total of 13 times over 4 days, resulting in a proposed forfeiture of $280,000. Finally, seven NBC Universal-owned cable networks transmitted the advertisement a total of 38 times over a span of 6 days, resulting in a proposed forfeiture of $530,000. The FCC has long prohibited the transmission of actual or simulated EAS signals or tones in circumstances other than a real alert or an authorized test of the EAS system. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reporting.
This case is the latest in a series of FCC enforcement actions to address a recent increase in consumer complaints regarding the illegal use of EAS alerting tones. In DX Upfront, word that members of the Italian D-Expedition team will be on the air from Zambia until March 17th using the call sign 9J2T. They are reportedly active on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL this operation via I2YSB, either direct or on OQRS or Logbook of the World. Time to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W8SRC repeater serving Ann Arbor, Michigan. Working to comply with federal guidelines and recent court decisions, the Poway, California City Council has signaled its intent to ease restrictions on local ham radio installations. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
News reports out of San Diego say that at a recent meeting, the nearby Poway City Council directed its staff to prepare a draft ordinance, one that will raise the height limit of antennas from 35 to 65 feet. The new rules should also make it easier and less expensive to obtain the permits to erect an amateur radio antenna and support structure. The Federal Communications Commission licenses amateur radio operators, but under PRB1, it gives municipalities some amount of limited power to regulate antennas under zoning codes. Over the years, that power has been shrinking in response to numerous lawsuits brought against cities around the nation. While hams in Poway have not taken any legal action, they have spent the last decade urging the city to change its rules. The council has been resistant, hoping to keep what it calls unattractive antennas from scarring the city's horizon and possibly lowering values of homes near such a structure. But now, Poway officials are changing their stance, most likely to protect against future lawsuits and bring the city within federal guidelines. According to a survey conducted by Poway officials, most San Diego County cities have no height limit, and few, if any, have permit requirements. Bob Manis is the director of developmental services. By contrast, he told the city council that Poway has some of the most stringent antenna laws in the country. This includes a 35-foot height limit. It also has a permitting process that, among other things, requires neighbors to be notified if a new antenna is proposed. But all that appears to be changing. According to the council, it has been concluded that a jurisdiction must make reasonable accommodations for amateur radio operators and their antenna installations, and that's good news for hams living in the Poway area. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
We'll let you know the outcome of this proposed antenna ordinance change in a future newscast. The 28th Annual Governor's Hurricane Conference will be held May 11th through the 16th at the Rosen Center Hotel and Orange County Convention Center in Orlando, Florida. This conference also features an impressive presence of amateur radio and ARIES members. As plans for amateur radio-related workshops and forums evolve, they'll be reported in the ARRL's ARIES e-letter. More information can be found on the web at flghc.org. The La Clinicia's Mobile Health Center in Medford, Oregon, has gained the added ability to communicate by radio during an emergency. This thanks to the generous donation of a portable amateur radio station from Jackson County Amateur Radio Emergency Service. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the latest.
David Dismuke is the outreach coordinator of La Clinica. He says the new ham radio station was purchased through a grant from the National Public Health Preparedness Program. He also says that it will be stored with the Mobile Health Center for use if an emergency takes down other forms of communications. The Jackson County Amateur Radio Emergency Service, which made the donation, is an all-volunteer group of Medford. They are amateur radio operators trained in emergency communications. The group functions under the Jackson County Sheriff's Volunteer Program and reports to the County Emergency Manager. It operates using the services of the Rogue Valley Manor K7RVM repeater on 147.00 megahertz and has nearly two dozen amateur radio stations placed throughout the county. This includes those set up at hospitals, fire stations, the County Emergency Coordination Center, the Health Department, and the 911 Dispatch Center. The La Clinica Mobile Health Center team is part of Jackson County's plan for responding to major emergencies. The Mobile Health Center would not be part of the initial response, but could be called on in the following days to provide healthcare services. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP, in Scottsdale, Arizona.
The equipment donated by the Jackson County Amateur Radio Emergency Service will help clinic workers remain connected in case of a disaster and enable them to help send information to and from other emergency responders. HRD Software has announced that it acquired the rights to the Sam Callbook CD. HRD says that it will honor the current subscriber base and continue to send out the monthly CDs starting in March. HRD says it will also be developing a Windows interface for the callbook. Windows 32, 64-bit, and Windows RT versions are planned, as well as incorporating the callbook data into HRD Logbook. This will provide immediate downloads for United States and Canadian calls from the Internet inside of HRD Logbook. More information about the Sam Callbook CD will be on the HRD website in late March. HRD Software also announced the release of Ham Radio Deluxe 6.2 Preview Beta 2. This includes many fixes for issues the user base has found. The list of the fixes and enhancements for Beta 2 is on the HRD website, www.ham-radio-deluxe.com. Radio Amateurs of Canada and RF Finder have announced a new business agreement effective March 1st. As of that date, Radio Amateurs of Canada has endorsed RF Finder as the official worldwide repeater directory for all Canadian amateur radio operators. RF Finder is described as a steadily growing worldwide repeater directory. In addition to single-site machines, RF Finder also lists IRLP, Echolink, All-Star, D-Star, Moto TRBO, and even Winlink information in over 175 countries. Canadian hams purchasing the RF Finder application will financially benefit the Radio Amateurs of Canada through the terms of this new agreement. Some names in the news. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler has announced his intent to appoint Travis LeBlanc as acting chief of the agency's Enforcement Bureau. LeBlanc previously served as a top deputy and senior advisor to California's Attorney General Harris, where he spent his time overseeing the office's complex operations and activities. This included, but was not limited to, issues involving complex litigation and policy matters on a broad range of issues such as technology regulation, telecommunications, high-tech crime, cybersecurity, privacy, intellectual property, and antitrust. During his time with the Office of the California Attorney General, he established and oversaw California's first high-tech crime and privacy enforcement units. Guy Hamblin, N7UN, has been recognized for his work in helping to establish the popular Summits on the Air, or SOTA, award program in the United States. Hamblin was selected by the Summits on the Air management team to receive the SOTA Sherpa Award, which is presented annually and is sponsored by SOTA Beams. This is an outdoor radio specialist award, and the award consists of a handsome certificate and some store credit at the SOTA Beams online shop. Turning to happenings in the world of amateur radio, the 2014 Southeastern VHF Society Conference will be held April 25th and 26th at the Hilton Atlanta Northeast in the Atlanta suburb of Norcross, Georgia. The conference will kick off with a luncheon on Friday. During the conference, there will be seminars, sessions, as well as noise figure testing and antenna testing. A banquet with speaker on Saturday evening to close the festivities will also take place. For further information on speakers, agenda, etc., check the link, svhfs.org/conference.html. And if you happen to be in or around this area on Saturday, March the 15th, you are cordially invited to the 30th annual ARRL Charleston, West Virginia Hamfest. This event will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. local time at the Coonskin Armory, 1707 Coonskin Drive in Charleston, West Virginia. Admission is only $6 at the gate. Ham radio exams will be administered by a VE testing team at 12:30 p.m. If you'd like more information, contact this reporter, Jim Dameron, N8TMW, by email to n8tmw@arrl.net. I hope to meet some of you there. This is Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The changing of the guard continues with the sad news that former ARRL General Manager and QST Editor John Huntoon, W1RW, became a silent key February 23rd at the age of 97. Huntoon of East Hartford, Connecticut, served as ARRL Secretary and General Manager from 1961 until 75. A full charter life member of ARRL, he also was the secretary of the International Amateur Radio Union and editor of QST. John Huntoon was an Illinois native who became interested in radio and electronics as a youngster, and he obtained the amateur radio call of W9KJY in 1932 while he was still in high school. Soon he was deeply involved in traffic handling and became very proficient in radio telegraphy. In 1936, he was elected Illinois Section Communications Manager, which was a forerunner of the current section manager position. He also served as secretary of the Chicago Area Radio Club Council. Following his tenure as ARRL General Manager, Mr. Huntoon served as ARRL Treasurer from 1976 through 1980. He also was active in the Quarter Century Wireless Association and was on its board of directors. His daughter said he remained active in the QCWA until recently. Modulator Demodulator Software Radio, or MDSR, has upgraded its software to bring radio amateurs the best audio quality out of your existing analog rig. This by turning it into an intermediate frequency software-defined radio. According to the MDSR team, a simple and reversible modification on many analog transceivers is all it takes to connect the down converter to a sound card of the computer running Windows XP, Vista, 7, or 8. MDSR works well with any symmetrical HF transceiver. Best of all, the MDSR version 2.8 software is free to use for amateur radio operators. More about it at tinyurl.com/MDSR-2014. Just click on MDSR Kit and Installation. South Africa AMSAT has expanded its call for schools to submit proposals for small scientific projects to be included in the Kletskoos CubeSat project. Each proposal will be evaluated and the five most original and practical ones will be selected to build a prototype. The school projects selected to build prototypes will be invited to make a brief presentation at the South Africa AMSAT Space Symposium to be held May 23rd at the Innovation Hub in Pretoria. Closing date for proposals is 31 March 2014. The American Legion Amateur Radio Club will operate special event station K9TAL Saturday, March 15th between 1400 to 2100 UTC. This to commemorate the 95th anniversary of the American Legion. The primary frequency to look for K9TAL will be 14.275 on 20 meters. A full-color certificate will be available to those who work NQSL K9TAL. More information on the web at www.legion.org/hamradio. The Musilla Valley Radio Club of Las Cruces, New Mexico, will be operating special event station K5B March 23rd. This in conjunction with the 25th annual Bataan Memorial Death March Marathon event to be held at the nearby White Sands Missile Range. K5B will be operating as near as possible to 21.337, 14.330, 7.225, and 3.893 MHz as band conditions permit. Those QSLing with a self-addressed stamped envelope will receive a commemorative card in return. More information is available at www.n5bl.org/Bataan, B-A-T-A-A-N. And while a bit of a short notice, the 2014 Tesla Memorial Contest will be held March 8th, starting 1800 UTC, ending at 0800 UTC on the 9th. The competition is open to operators worldwide. Participants must use CW only on the 80-meter band. Points are awarded for distance between stations. Full details, tinyurl.com/Tesla-memorial. NDX, DD5ZZ is now active as 8P9BZ from Dover Beach, Barbados, and will be there through March 13th. His activity is holiday style, 40 through 10 meters, using mainly the digital modes, QSL to DD5ZZ, either direct or via the DARC QSL Bureau. ZS6AYU will once again be active as C91GR from Mozambique between March 16th through the 19th. His operation, holiday style, 40 through 10 meters, using CW only with 350 watts into a Cushcraft R7000 vertical. QSL via ZS6AYU, either direct or by way of the Bureau. DL7DF will lead a team of operators to activate Sri Lanka between March the 10th through the 23rd. Activity will be on 160 through 6 meters using several stations operating CW and SSB. One station will be exclusively dedicated to RITI, PSK-31, and SSTV. They'll upload the full logs of the de-expedition to Logbook of the World within 6 months after the de-expedition. QSL via DL7DF, direct or by the Bureau. Members of the Amateur Radio Taipei will be active as BP0P during the CQ Worldwide SSB contest March 29th and 30th as a multi-2 entry. QSL via BP0P. Lastly, F5SGI will be active stroke CT9 from the Madeira Islands between April the 5th through the 12th. His operation will be on 80 through 10 meters using mostly CW. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. And finally this week, is CB radio giving way to emerging technology? In one area of the United States, that appears to be the case. As we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK.
It does appear that 11-meter citizens band radio is taking a back seat with truckers on Interstate 80 in and around Omaha, Nebraska. This after the installation of road watching cameras tied to a control center that alerts those driving the corridor of problems that may lie ahead through high visibility electronic signs. Tim Persing has been a truck driver for the past 24 years. He says that the new alerting system has taken the place of CB radio, at least in that geographic area. A half decade ago, CB radio was the only way to warn truckers about upcoming problems on roadways. But thanks to new technology, they are seeing more than they can hear on CB. Gary Foreman is with the Nebraska Department of Roads. He says that truckers do pay attention to those signs. For example, if word is put out not to use the I-80 bypass on I-680, we see all the truck traffic in compliance. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
While this might be true in that one area of Nebraska, 11-meter CB is still going strong with long-haul truckers across the length and breadth of this nation and our neighbors to the north and south. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South Africa Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. And before we go, a very special thank you to Dave Booth, KC6WFS, who spent about a week and a half completely rebuilding our main production computer after a major failure. Thanks to Dave, the machine is back in service and running far better than when we first purchased it back some 4 years ago. All of us at Amateur Radio Newsline appreciate KC6WFS volunteerism very, very much. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73. and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.